One of the main scams that Steve Baum was involved with was an apparent attempt to smuggle nuclear weapons to the Middle East and specifically Syria. An indictment involving this attempt to smuggle nuclear weapons came to light in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, among other papers, of June 6, 1984. Research credit to this to Ted Rubenstein. This is an AP story, Dateline Trento, and headlined, 30 Accused of Trying to Sell Nuclear Arms. And again, we're back to Steve Baum here. A state prosecutor is recommending indictments against more than 30 people for allegedly smuggling weapons and military vehicles and trying to sell nuclear weapons. Prosecutor Enrico Cavalieri said Tuesday night that he filed the recommendation with Judge Carlo Palermo, who has spent 4 years investigating the arms and drug smuggling ring. Among those listed in Cavalieri's report, according to the Italian news agency ANSA, was Rossano Brazzi, B-R-A-Z-Z-I, the Italian actor known for his movie role in South Pacific and Three Coins in the Fountain. Cavalieri confirmed the ANSA dispatch, which quoted his report to Palermo. He said, more than 30 people were involved in a failed attempt to sell nuclear weapons to three unidentified Arab nations and to Argentina, but declined to give other details such as what weapons or nuclear fuel was actually sold and who produced them. ANSA said the group is also suspected of trying to sell submachine guns, tanks, helicopters, missiles, ships, plutonium, and uranium to Iraq, Taiwan, the Philippines, and Argentina. The prosecutor's recommendations are not binding and are only meant as advice for the judge, who has final say on indictments under Italian law. ANSA said Palermo filed his recommendations Monday with a Trento court, along with 300,000 pages of documents. Details of that report are covered by Italy's Official Secrets Act. The news agency said Cavalieri's 58-page report recommended indictments for former military officers, businessmen, and several foreigners. ANSA quoted Cavalieri's report as saying Brazzi's involvement was unclear, but that he should be indicted so as to allow a more in-depth examination of his role, unquote. The actor's Rome home was searched last year on a warrant issued by Palermo. Also named in the report, according to ANSA, were Colonel Massimo Pugliese, P-U-G-L-I-E-S-E, once head of military intelligence, Italian businessman Carlo Bertoncini, and Egyptian citizen Ivan Galileos. The report said there was sufficient evidence to try all the men for criminal association. The indictment sought by Cavalieri is the latest in a long series of actions against the ring, ANSA said. Last year, 28 of its members were found guilty of having exported armored cars and helicopters to Iran and other Middle East countries in exchange for heroin that was marketed in Western Europe. They were sentenced to up to 18 years in jail. Palermo told the state-run RAI radio network last year that the ring's operations touched nearly all European countries producing arms, especially Italy, West Germany, Spain, and Britain. Quote, then there are the transit countries, among them Bulgaria, Turkey, Yugoslavia, and Greece. You could say all the countries in the Mediterranean area were involved, he told the radio. So a couple of the points to underscore about this. We're going to talk about the nuclear arms smuggling scam or attempt to smuggle nuclear arms in a little bit. Two of the key names to remember here are Rossano Brazzi, about whom we're going to talk in just a minute, and Colonel Massimo Pugliese, a former Italian intelligence chief. And as we're going to find out, Colonel Massimo Pugliese, the Italian intelligence chief, has connections with an Italian fascist organization which has an awful lot of connections to an awful lot of other Italian intelligence chiefs.
That's right. And one of the places where it comes up, and it's mentioned in the book In God's Name by David Yalop, which we've been using quite a bit during this series of broadcasts, is during 1982, at the time of the Falklands War. And originally, Licio Gelli was attempting to get Exocet missiles for Argentina. Bear in mind, Argentina's strong contacts, the Argentine military's strong contacts to the P2 and to Italian fascists, when we're thinking about these things. Licio Gelli was doing his best to get Exocet missiles to the Argentinian military from France, and this first operation fell through, and then Yalop writes about the second one. In August 1982, he writes, the Argentinian junta secretly decided to recommence hostilities against the British forces guarding the Falklands. They felt that with more Exocets, they could win the war and the islands. This time, Gelli dealt with a former officer of the Italian Secret Service, Colonel Massimo Pugliese, a member of P2. Again, British intelligence learned of the proposed deal. The British took steps to ensure that the deal fell through. So Colonel Massimo Pugliese, a member of P2, also indicted in the Stebaum case, involved apparently in the same case with Rossano Brazzi, as we will find out as we're going along, involved in an attempt to sell some weapons of some extreme magnitude to Syria, apparently. We'll talk about that more. But notice again, Licio Gelli, the connection to the Argentinian military junta, the P2 connections, and once again, also, of course, most importantly for our purposes, the connections of the P2 to Stebaum.
Okay, and remember the DEA connection of Arsan, and because we're going to be getting into some foreign intelligence connections here right now. Rossano Brazzi is the name we want to look at right now, and specifically, we're going to look at Brazzi's connections to a couple of American presidents, Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon. The first of the articles we're going to be looking at comes from the Corriere della Sera of June 4th, 1983. Again, researched by Ted Rubenstein, translated by Jonathan Marshall. Italian film star Rossano Brazzi, 65, gray-haired now, was the Latin lover of the cinema. Interrogated by Carlo Palermo because of his ties with people in the guns for drugs trade. What brought him to Palermo's attention was his recent friendship with General Giuseppe Santavito, ex-chief of the military secret service, CISMI, involved with P2. His ties with Colonel Massimo Pugliesi, also of the Secret Service, arrested on orders of the Trento magistrate. Pugliesi had just returned from Alta Coma, where he participated in the funeral of King Umberto. Brazzi is a personal friend of Ronald Reagan and a friend of Richard Nixon. Nothing strange, then, that the president of Somalia invited him officially, along with Santavito, to his country for economic advice. Brazzi knows the top American financiers and could be of help. So, before we go on to the next article, Rossano Brazzi is a good friend of Ronald Reagan's. Now, recall that Licio Gelli of P2 had performed a valuable service for Ronald Reagan on two counts, getting him good publicity in the Italian press, and perhaps even more importantly than that, through the auspices of the P2-controlled Super CISMI and Francesco Pazienza and Michael Ledeen, as we looked at in our last program. The Licio Gelli, again, through the Super CISMI group Pazienza and Ledeen, was able to help get damaging information about Billy Carter, specifically talking about Billy Carter's connections with Muammar Gaddafi of Libya, who in turn has, obviously, as we've looked at, many connections to the P2 complex in and of himself. However, the damaging information published in the New Republic and one other publication, I forget offhand, was instrumental in helping to assure a Reagan victory, and as I said, Licio Gelli also generated favorable publicity for Reagan in Italy. And quite probably as a result of those two events, Licio Gelli was a guest of honor at Ronald Reagan's inauguration in 1981. So when we have Brazzi, the Stibom-linked and through Stibom P2-linked actor being a friend of Reagan's, it's worth taking note of. Also, Brazzi is a friend of Richard Nixon. The connections between the Nixon administration and the P2 complex through Michele Sindona, among others, we looked at in programs 2 and 3. And another name to take note of in this article is Giuseppe Santavito. Key person in the Super CISMI group within Italian intelligence, key P2 member, and Santavito, along with fellow P2er and fellow Italian intelligence veteran Massimo Pugliesi, involved with Rossano Brazzi, apparently, in some of these machinations. Second article, we're going to bring in some of these same connections, and we're going to mention a very familiar name, in addition to Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon. From Panorama of the May 16, 1983, we find the following. A Sicilian doctor named Gregorio, close to Brazzi, decided to name himself Grand Master of the Sovereign Order of New Aragon, founded, according to him, by the Visigoths in A.D. 718. His idea was to conquer the island of Barbuda in the Caribbean with 1,150 inhabitants. As sidekick, he recruited his friend of 15 years, Brazzi. Brazzi says his old friend, Frank Sinatra, introduced him to Reagan in 1948. The two men went in on the project with Massimo Pugliesi, whom Brazzi met in 1974 when the ex-SID official approached him to do a documentary on Sacro Sindone. CBS 60 Minutes did a show called Return of the Visigoths on the New Aragon Movement. Dean Rusk and Tom Watson seem to have been involved. So some more big American names coming surfacing in connection with Rossano Brazzi, Massimo Pugliesi, and some of the key Stibom performers. Not only Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon, both American presidents with connections to the P2 complexes, as we looked at, but also Frank Sinatra, and possibly also former Secretary of State Dean Rusk as well.
Now, the 60 Minutes program referred to the return of the Visigoths suggested that although the people involved, and Rossano Brazzi was one of the people interviewed, although the people involved were suggesting that they just basically wanted this island of Barbuda just to be their kind of home for their particular sort of Catholic-oriented organization, that in fact what it was probably being looked at as was an offshore tax haven, and in fact Robert Vesco had been in the area sometime just before Rossano Brazzi and these others looking at Barbuda for exactly those purposes, an offshore tax haven. Remember, that is very important in these huge arms and drugs operations, because these places, since they are not subject to the income taxes of countries like the United States, France, or Italy, or whatever, it's much easier to hide their doings from government officials, honest government officials.
Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC Los Altos Hills. And in keeping in mind Reagan, Nixon, Frank Sinatra, Dean Rusk, Rossano Brazzi, Pugliese, Santovito, and the people we've been talking about, we're going to begin getting still further into the American connections to Stiebaum, and we're going to begin by taking a look at a guy named Garth Reynolds.
That's right, and talking about your offshore arms and tax haven, we're going to be talking about the ultimate in the offshore tax haven. This is an article from the Sunday Times of London. The article is written by Robin Morgan, Anthony Terry, and Dalbert Hallenstein. Came out in the issue of December 5th, 1982. It's headlined, Dealers Tout Arms in Floating Bazaars. This article was supplied to us by Ted Rubenstein. The article itself, we're going to skip the beginning, but it's talking about, basically, international arms dealers who are using tramp steamers to set up huge floating arms bazaars, that's B-A-Z-A-A-R, bazaars, and using those as a offshore arms dealerships. And one of them they're talking about in particular is an American by the name of Garth Reynolds, who had at that time steamed into London and had supplied a catalog listing all the things that he had for sale. The article talks a little bit about Reynolds' background. Reynolds surfaced briefly in Los Angeles in 1980 when customs officers arrested him on currency charges, but he disappeared once more. He has since been linked to a 71-year-old Syrian arms dealer, Henry Arsan. Arsan was arrested 2 weeks ago at his home in Varese, northern Italy, on illegal arms trade charges after a 2-year investigation. A search of his office uncovered copies of telex messages dated December 12, 1981, offering a list of arms almost identical with the Reynolds wares. The arms were similarly stored aboard ship in Genoa, with identical conditions of sale. In addition to the helicopters and rockets, Arsan had added 10 German-built Leopard tanks and, quote, thousands of Soviet-made Kalashnikov rifles, unquote, a total package worth £138 million. Let me just cut in parenthetically here to mention that one of the most important things for us to remember is when we're talking about things like the strategy of tension and we're talking about journalistic disinformation by people like Claire Sterling, one of the ways that they usually try and tie these terrorist acts to the left is to point out that a lot of them are committed with Soviet weapons or Soviet bloc weaponry. Well, notice here that Henry Arsan, an arms dealer tied directly to fascist terrorists, has got himself hundreds of thousands of Soviet-made Kalashnikov rifles, and in just a moment we'll find out how these weapons get into the hands of these people. Sources in the arms trade and Italian police believe the helicopters and tanks did not exist. They were used as bait to attract big-spending arms buyers in the hopes of selling the huge batches of infantry weapons, a classic ruse in black market arms deals. Other telexes dated as recently as 2 months ago were found in Arsan's files, offering further shipments of arms aboard ships in Italian ports. Such vast amounts of illegal weapons have begun to appear on the black market only in the past 2 years. At first, they came from Libya and other Arab countries eager to offload surplus Soviet arms. But more recently, arms caches in Lebanon, left behind by the Palestinian evacuation, have flooded the market. So we have, essentially, a lot of these Soviet-made weapons are coming from Libya and coming from Lebanon, being put on the international market by people like Henry Arsan and Garth Reynolds, this American, who is tied to Arsan.
Now, one of the interesting things about that article that Nip just read you was Garth Reynolds' presence in Los Angeles. Now, his presence in Los Angeles in connection with the Stiebaum ring is not at all surprising, and particularly in light of the following article. Again, research credit to Ted Rubenstein, translation for Jonathan Marshall. This is from the French magazine Le Point of March 14, 1983. Asim Akaya, brother of a police inspector in Ankara, was charged by him to reveal to Italian authorities the existence of a vast traffic in arms and heroin beginning in Turkey, transiting through Bulgaria, for rallying near Trento, a city near Venice. Milan police took the case to Judge Carlo Palermo on November 22, 1979. No one knows why Akaya told his story, but it was incredible. Heavy trucks, TIR, that's the name of the manufacturer, loaded up with heroin in Turkey or light arms in Syria, for terrorists, and dropped their loads in Trento for distribution throughout Italy, Austria, West Germany, Britain, and even France. In the reverse route, cargoes of arms left Los Angeles for points around the world. Carabinieri invaded the Hotel Carinal belonging to Carlo Kofler. By the way, I would add that Carlo Kofler was the Stibaum associate who wound up committing suicide by thrusting a large needle through his own heart in prison, like so many other people who die in prison. Beginning that sentence again. Carabinieri invaded the Hotel Carinal belonging to Carlo Kofler, the home of butcher Giorgio Malone, the villa of Herbert Oberhofer in Bolzano. They discovered 140 kilos of heroin. They found drugs in Verona and Trieste. Acaya's information was exact. 220 people were arrested. Three of the most important names proved to be Henri Arsène, 70, Mehmet Kantas, C-A-N-T-A-S, 46, a Turk, shipper with a company called Sutas in Los Angeles, and Bekir Çelenk, C-E-L-E-N-K, drug trafficking Turk based in Sofia. I'm going to read those three names again because they're very important, in particular Bekir Çelenk. Three of the most important names, and this again we're talking about Stibaum, proved to be Henri Arsène, 70, Mehmet Kantas, 46, a Turk, shipper with a company called Sutas in Los Angeles, and Bekir Çelenk, drug trafficking Turk based in Sofia. Acaya has disappeared. Executed? That is a question mark there. Arsène cracked under interrogation. He said the guns for drugs traffic had been going on for 20 years. He admitted that he was in charge of recycling the billions and laundering the dollars. I would interrupt, perhaps that's what the proximity to Ambrosiano was for. He also produced figures on arms trade, around 300 tanks and nearly as many helicopters salvaged from Vietnam. He spoke of arms deliveries to Khomeini. Kantas escaped ahead of American police and made it to Zurich, where his shipping company has headquarters. He denies touching drugs. That was Bekir Çelenk's job. So the main points here are that the Stibaum Arms for Drugs ring had a major branch originating in Los Angeles, where we saw Garth Reynolds, an American connected with the ring, surfacing in the last article that Nip read you. Now, in Los Angeles, a man named Mehmet Kantas, another Turk, is basically running the show out of a shipping company called Sutas, based in Zurich, Switzerland. And perhaps the most important name here for our purposes, and bear in mind that we're gravitating towards the shooting of Pope John Paul II, is Bekir Çelenk, described as a drug-trafficking Turk based in Sofia. Recall the fascist Grey Wolves and Mehmet Ali Aja's participation in that group and their connection to narcotics trafficking originating in Turkey and quite possibly the Abdi Ipeki murder. Because Bekir Çelenk is one of the key figures in the supposed Bulgarian connection of the plot to shoot the Pope. So again, Arsène and all the P2 and Western connections, Arsène himself, a DEA agent, with Rossano Brazzi, we have connections to Nixon, Reagan, Frank Sinatra, as well as P2 members Pugliese and Santovito. Now we're moving to the United States. We have a major branch of this company in Los Angeles, and Bekir Çelenk, one of the key figures from the Pope shooting plot, one of the top three people in Stibaum.
And also, as mentioned, like Mehmet Ali Aja, connected to the Grey Wolves' drug trafficking in the Middle East. Going to read an article from the San Jose Mercury for December 23rd, 1982. The headline is Italian Warrant Links Drug Ring Attack on Pope. This is a Los Angeles Times Wire story, Dateline Rome. An arrest warrant alleging arms and drug trafficking was issued Wednesday for Bekir Çelenk, a Turk suspected of aiding Turkish terrorist Mehmet Ali Aja in his attempt to assassinate Pope John Paul II on May 13, 1981. The warrant, issued in the northern Italian city of Trento, was the first time that the alleged arms ring was publicly linked to one of the alleged plotters against the Pope. In Trento, state prosecutor Carlo Palermo said that warrants had been issued for Çelenk and a Turkish associate named İsmail Öflü in connection with the smuggling ring. Meanwhile, the trial of an Italian couple charged with espionage in Bulgaria began in Sofia Wednesday, with a postponement at the request of the defendants, according to the official Bulgarian news agency, BTA. Italian police last month broke up what they said was, quote, the largest world organization of illegal arms traffic, operating in Bulgaria, Italy, West Germany, and Turkey, selling large quantities of arms to mainly Middle East buyers in exchange for heroin. Bulgaria is, quote, a principal contact point, unquote, in arms and drug traffic, Italian Justice Minister Clelio Darida said Monday. Çelenk, who is reported under detention in Sofia and the Bulgarian Secret Service, have been linked to the papal assassination attempt by Rome investigating magistrate Ilario Martella. Well, we're going to be talking more about this so-called Bulgarian connection. But again, note, at this point, as we begin to close in on the closer innermost circle of the Mediterranean merry-go-round, and note these direct connections. We have Mehmet Ali Agha, the assassin, the would-be assassin of the Pope, working in working with the fascist Grey Wolves and working with their drug smuggling, presumably. Fascist Grey Wolves involved with drug smuggling, Mehmet Ali Agha, a member of that group. Bekir Çelenk, who, as we're going to find out, is connected not only to Mehmet Ali Agha, but to the Grey Wolves themselves. Bekir Çelenk also is involved with Mehmet Ali Agha and, in fact, helps him to get the gun that he uses to attempt to shoot John Paul II.
Actually, the Agha himself, although Agha changed his story, identified Bekir Çelenk, we'll talk about this next time, as the paymaster for the plot. Supposedly, he paid million marks. It's more than a minor pointer, not to pick nits, but according to Agha, this is the man who paid him. This is the paymaster for the whole Bulgarian plot. As we've seen, he's one of the top three men in an explicitly fascist-linked arms for drugs ring with connections to American intelligence that we're going to be developing, whose associates intersect with American presidents for about the last 20 years, and things of that kind. And so this is the paymaster here. We'll be talking about that next time.
Good point. I'm glad you made that correction. Okay,
so the person who got on the gun is interesting, too. We'll be going into that.
That's right. Yes. We're going to get to them in a moment. Well, actually, next week, mostly. Okay. But again, Mehmet Ali Agha, directly linked through both his organization and through the operation itself and the payment rendered by Bekir Çelenk. Bekir Çelenk, a member of STEBOM, International Guns for Drugs Organization, inextricably linked with P2, as we have seen, as well as American intelligence for the purposes right now, inextricably linked with P2, and in fact, apparently laundering the money through the offices that they shared with the Banco Ambrosiano of Milan. P2... and the Banco Ambrosiano in Milan directly linked into the Vatican Bank. And the bodyguard of John Paul II, the man who was shot at, Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, head of the Vatican Bank, collaborator with Michele Sindona and Roberto Calvi in all these financial affairs, many of which coincide or intersect directly with STEBOM. So we have basically a very short connective chain of about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 places directly between Mehmet Ali Agha and Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, the Pope's bodyguard and the head of the Vatican Bank. On the other hand, as we will see later on, the chain of very dismal circumstantial evidence attempting to paint a case for the Bulgarian thesis is so convoluted as to be almost inconceivable how anybody could even try and pass it off in the first place, let alone have the success with it they did. Bear in mind, as we're going into this stuff later on, this direct and incontrovertible chain of evidence between Mehmet Ali Agha and the Vatican itself, a very short, very, very impressively sturdy chain.
And remember also, something we'll be developing at much greater length next week, and we'll be encountering here in a few minutes, the Western intelligence connections to STEBOM. One branch of it originates in Los Angeles, the Sutas Shipping Company, and Bekir Çelenk, the reputed paymaster, and we'll be talking about this next week, the reputed paymaster of the Pope shooting plot is one of the top three officials in the STEBOM arms for drugs ring. As we're going to look at, he also is affiliated with the Grey Wolves, the fascist Turkish, the fascist party of Turkey, or the youth wing of it. Research credit for the following story again goes to Ted Rubenstein. He got this from The Guardian, formerly the Manchester Guardian. I say that to distinguish it from an American leftist publication called The Guardian. But Ted got this from the Manchester Guardian of November 29th, 1982. It's from The Guardian's correspondent in Rome, George Armstrong, and headlined, Agha to confront accused Bulgar. I'm only going to read a couple of short sections. Skipping down, a Turkish author and journalist, Mr. Ugur Mumcu, we're coming back to him later in next week's broadcast, widely regarded in Ankara as the country's most knowledgeable person on the Turkish underground outside the police, said he had learned without doubt that Bekir Çelenk, one of those whose name is on the international warrant, had met Agha in the Vitosha Hotel in Sofia between July 10th and 12th, 1980. He said that Çelenk was using a false passport in the name of Nakati Çelik and stayed in room 1078 while Agha stayed in room 911. Mr. Mumcu stated that Çelenk and Oral Çelik, the other man wanted in Italy, were, like Agha, members of the extreme right-wing group known as the Grey Wolves and had fled Turkey after the military coup in 1980. So Bekir Çelenk, according to this information, which in turn quotes Ugur Mumcu, generally considered, as mentioned here, not only the country's top expert on the underground, but an extension of that underground, specifically considered Turkey's top terrorism researcher. And according to Mumcu, Bekir Çelenk is a member of the fascist Grey Wolves, along with Mehmet Ali Agha. And Çelenk's key position in the STEBOM arms for drugs ring, worth remembering, in that context. Now, another possible connection between Stiebaum and the shooting of the Pope is mentioned in the same Guardian article of November 29, 1982. It's a mysterious connection, unresolved, but one which will make more sense later in the broadcast. The Italians would also like to question a Gerard Donovan, known also as J. Douziar, D-O-U-Z-I-A-R, who holds an Australian and Iranian passport. He was last seen in Rome in spring of last year, and in his haste to leave, he left a large amount of money behind in a safe deposit box. They believe he may have been involved in the attempt on the Pope's life and in the giant drug and arms smuggling ring which has been discovered in northern Italy, which included Bulgarian and Turkish connections. So another interesting possible connection between Stiebaum and the Pope shooting, an Australian known as Gerard Donovan, who carries Australian and Iranian passports and who goes also under the name of J. Douziar. As we're going to see, well, we've already looked at the Iranian connections that was mentioned in the Le Point article of, in several of the articles, actually, of Stiebaum involvement with arms to Iran. It's worth noting here the Australian passport. That's going to make much more sense later in the program.
Okay, going to read a very short segment from a Washington Post article of December 8, 1982. The headline, Three Bulgarians Linked to Shooting of the Pope. The article is written by Sari Gilbert as a special to the Post. And it's just a short segment here. It says, one name mentioned in reports on the smuggling network, that smuggling network, of course, being Stiebaum, is that of Abuzer Ugurlu, U-G-U-R-L-U, a major Turkish criminal who reportedly met Aja in Bulgaria and was named in U.S. media reports as a key link between Aja and the Bulgarians. Martella, that's Judge Ilario Martella, flew to Ankara to question Ugurlu, who, the magistrate said in an interview earlier this fall, denied any involvement in the assassination attempt.
Okay, so the definite connection between the supposed Bulgarian thesis and before we get into the Bulgarian thesis, the definite connection between Stiebaum and the plot against the Pope is Bekir Çelenk, a fellow Grey Wolf, according to the top Turkish expert on the subject of Mehmet Ali Aja. The Grey Wolves very much involved in the narcotics traffic originating in considerable measure in Turkey. And Bekir Çelenk is the paymaster for this proposed plot. Two other names, interestingly enough, the aforementioned Abuzur Ugurlu, also a mysterious Australian named Gerard Donovan, also who holds a passport, J. Douziar. We'll take a look at a possible Australian connection here, in fact, a definite Australian connection, well, in a couple of articles that we're about to get into right now. Now, one of the most important aspects of Stiebaum, one which obviously has been implied to a certain extent by the fact that Henry Arsan is a DEA agent of long standing, bought drugs, in fact, morphine-based from the DEA, with the many interesting American connections, Rossano Brazzi's connections to Sinatra, Reagan, and Nixon, the link-up between Garth Reynolds and the Stiebaum Arms for Drugs ring, and the fact, of course, that one key branch of that ring originated in Los Angeles. What we're going to be looking at now specifically is the massive, massive intersection of Western intelligence, specifically American intelligence, with the Stiebaum Arms for Drugs ring. And remember that one of its key figures, reportedly the paymaster, in the plot to shoot the Pope. Research credit for the following articles also goes to Ted Rubenstein and translation once again to Jonathan Marshall, editorial page editor of the Tribune. The following three articles are from the French newspaper Le Matin. And the first of the articles, it was a three-part series on three successive days in 1984. The first of the Le Matin articles that we're going to be looking at comes from Le Matin of June 20th, 1984. It's an article headlined Bargain Bombs, and it was authored by the Le Matin Italian correspondent Fabrizio Calvi, no relation as far as we know. And Bargain Bombs reads as follows. And remember now all of the P2 connections and the connection to the Pope shooting that we've spoken about. On June 4th, the public prosecutor of Trento, a little-known town in the north of Italy, asked the indictment of 30 individuals. He possessed an enormous dossier, the fruit of 4 years of inquiry in the four corners of the world. Among those implicated, five persons who served as intermediaries for the sale of three 20-megaton bombs to Syria. Le Matin investigated for 3 months to trace this thread. The dossier is composed of 300,000 pages. Stacked together, they constitute a pile more than 100 meters high. So, interrupting, that the documentation upon which, for those people who might be inclined to turn up their nose at this, the documentation upon which this is based, if the papers were stacked on top of each other, would be higher than a football field stood on its end. So, continuing. In this mass are two sheets of paper where one can read, three atomic bombs, read, quote, three atomic bombs, weight, 90 kilograms, enriched uranium, 40 kilograms, U-235, power 20 megatons TNT. Dimensions, 41 inches by 11 inches. The hull is covered with a case of lead for reasons of security and can be used only from an airplane. Delivery should take place in the country of the buyer.
The three can be assembled now and will be ready for delivery 6 weeks later after disbursing 60% of the payment. The net price for the three is $924 American.
$924 million
American, excuse me.
That's a bargain.
Thanks.
Yeah.
They are indeed bargain bombs. Thanks for the correction. If I need similar assistance, please provide it, because, again, at some point, you're going to blow one of these with all this reading.
Right.
First phase of the operation. An RWA, a letter of cautioning, engaging the responsibility of a leading bank, will be effectuated for the totality of the sum under the code name GEM in the face of the Trade Development Bank of Luxembourg, Telex 2621, telephone 41893. Attention, Glauco Partel Pass HO63381. Remember the name Glauco Partel. Key name here. Second phase of the operation. Again, still quoting from the documents here. A reunion at a place between the buyer and the seller at TBB. If the buyer isn't satisfied, he takes back the RWA and goes. If he is satisfied, he addresses to Glauco Partel, P-A-R-T-E-L, a letter of credit confirmed irrevocable, transferable, and divisible under the code GEM. This letter authorizes the withdrawal of 60% of its value as deposit. Before this happens, the buyer sends three experts, no more, to the factory of the seller, where they will follow all the phases of production, which last 6 weeks. Third phase. Once the three bombs are completed and tested, they will be shipped in exchange for payment of the 40% remaining. From this sale are excluded Israel and South Africa, unquote. Now, this is not a quote from the documents, but continuing with the text from Le Matin. On June 6th, all newspapers subscribing to the French press agency received on their telex the following dispatch. Quote, Italy arms. An investigation over 4 years by Judge Carlo Palermo into an enormous international traffic in arms, including atomic bombs, ended with the indictment of 30 persons. The indictment included notably the actor Rossano Brazzi, interrupting friend of Nixon and Reagan, Colonel Massimo Pugliese, ex-member of the Italian Secret Service, and four other Italians who would also have acted as intermediaries in the sale of three atomic bombs to Arab countries. Many materials were destined for Iraq, such as hundreds of tanks, nearly 34 grams of plutonium, 1,000 kilograms of uranium, SAM-7 missiles, 500 Kalashnikov submachine guns, etc. No details were given as to the foreigners figuring among the 30 persons indicted. Henry Arsan, the Syrian businessman considered the brains of the traffic, died last year in prison in Milan. Repeating that last sentence. Henry Arsan, the Syrian businessman considered the brains of the traffic, died last year in prison in Milan. And I would interrupt again to say, add Arsan to the long and growing list of prison casualties which result when the investigations of these various P2-related scams begin. Continuing. The four other Italians mentioned were Glauco Partel, Carlo Bertoncini, Vincenzo Giovanelli, and Ivan Galileos. Certainly, Carlo Palermo, well, that basically concludes that section. So, before we continue, three atomic bombs were going to be shipped to unnamed Middle Eastern countries. Possibility of Syria will be discussed later on. But it's worth noting here that as we get into the American intelligence connections, that the leader of this ring, Henry Arsan, after his arrest, dies in prison conveniently before any of the cases that he's connected with can come up in court.
Continuing with the Le Matin article a little further down. In any case, the five principal indictees, in other words, the folks indicted, are stars of the arms traffic milieu. The most famous is Glauco Partel. This Roman engineer, specializing in the fabrication of missiles, directs the Center for Research on Missile Propulsion in Rome, a private institute. When Palermo, Judge Palermo, interrogated him, Partel admitted that for the last 15 years, he worked for the National Security Agency. That's the U.S. National Security Agency, which employs 200,000 agents. And if it is less talked about than the CIA, it is no less effective. Partel, moreover, isn't lacking for sponsors. In 1981, during the Falklands War, he participated in a formidable operation on behalf of British intelligence for the befuddlement of the Argentine services. In Paris, he proposed to the captain of the vessel Alfredo Corti, chief of the naval air mission of the Argentine ambassador, the sale of 24 Exocet missiles. The Argentine jumped at the chance. The Exocets were never delivered. They never existed. The captain was repatriated on the double.
should just mention here, it's interesting that what this story actually is, we're not quite sure at this point. But here on one end of this thing, we've got Licio Gelli and Massimo Pugliese. Massimo Pugliese already connected to Stibom, trying to put together a sale of Exocet missiles. On the other hand, in this article, they're suggesting that Glauco Partel was working on behalf of Britain to pretend there would be a sale of Exocet missiles, which in fact there wouldn't be. So a story that needs to be a little further investigated.
Well, one possibility is that the U.S. and Britain were cooperating in the Falklands War, a fact which drew a lot of anger from the Argentines.
Yes, indeed.
And remember, Partel is working by his own admission for the National Security Agency for 15 years.
Continuing. So the intermediary in the A-bomb affair had a charged past, but so did the seller himself. Eugene Bartholomaeus was installed in the Australian city of Sydney and had already done business with Partel, selling him tanks and helicopters. He told his client that it all came from CIA surplus arms stores. In 1980, Bartholomaeus was mixed up in the Nugan Hand Bank scandal. I'll get back to that in a second. Eugene Bartholomaeus and his companion Edwin Wilson, since convicted in the United States, were implicated in the illicit sale of arms to Libya. He was also tied to mafia families in Los Angeles, and he maintained excellent relations with an Australian of Chinese origin, Dennis Wong, suspected of being a crime syndicate director in Sydney. But this time, it seemed, Eugene Bartholomaeus hit the jackpot. It was more than a question of ultra-modern tanks, helicopters, or frigates. What he proposed was nothing less than the sale of three nuclear devices. The telexes don't indicate where they were to be assembled. We don't know if the Americans mounted this operation to intimidate Israel and South Africa, excluded as buyers of the bombs. Partel, after all, was a specialist in deception, as shown by his role with the Exocets. In any case, the Roman engineer, that's Glauco Partel still, explained that he contacted representatives of the Syrian government who were very interested in the purchase. The negotiations began shortly thereafter. A telex seized by Judge Palermo from Partel's office reads, quote, arrived, negotiator seller in Amsterdam Wednesday, 27th of January. After contact will follow to Luxembourg. Okay, bunch of important things to look at here in this article. Okay, we're talking about Glauco Partel now, who, by his own admission, says that he is working for the NSA, the National Security Agency, the top-secret United States intelligence agency that works almost exclusively with intelligence gleaned from electronic sources and other sources of that sort. A huge organization, very secretive. Glauco Partel also apparently involved somehow in the Exocet missile deal going on or not going on in the Argentine Falklands War. Now, the Falklands War come in a variety of ways into this whole operation, not only because of the fact of the strong connections between the P2 and the Italian P2 and the Argentine P2, but also, as we will talk about next week, because of the involvement of certain other people at that time and the involvement of people like Michael Ledeen involved in the Pope shooting with Alexander Haig, some speculation that we have there, things of that nature. A bunch of things to look at in terms of the Falklands. Partel's involvement there, something to be checked into. Now, involved with Partel in the sale of the A-bombs, for which Pugliese and Rosanna Brazzi and the others are indicted, Eugene Bartholomaeus. Bartholomaeus, with a very interesting background, involved in the Nugan Hand Bank scandal. Now, the Nugan Hand Bank, for those of you who have not been following these broadcasts long enough to remember, the Nugan Hand Bank was an intelligence bank, okay, that was put together out of the...
It was a joint CIA and Naval Intelligence Operation. The Naval Intelligence group involved here was called Task Force 157. And a couple of key names to remember in connection with Task Force 157, Henry Kissinger and the aforementioned Edwin Wilson. We'll be going into that in our series on organized crime, intelligence, and narcotics. We touched on it briefly in Radio Free America 4 when we were talking about the Turple Wilson connection.
Anyway, the Nugan Hand Bank, a very interesting bank for a variety of reasons. The Nugan Hand Bank was primarily an intelligence bank. There were a lot of CIA operations being run through the bank, with the bank as a cover for laundering of money in the drug traffic and the weapons traffic, and also for direct CIA political operations. When one of the bank's founders was found dead in the Australian outback, Government agents descended on the bank, forced the employees to stay in there all night long, shredding documents, and told any of them that if they said a word about what had happened, that their families would be killed. These are U.S. military and intelligence officers telling this to bank employees, according to several different accounts. Anyway, the Nugenhand Bank, as Dave mentioned, linked to Task Force 157, Henry Kissinger, and Ed Wilson. Ed Wilson, of course, also involved very heavily with Muammar Gaddafi, with Frank Turpel and Gary George Corkula, who we're going to talk about in a little while. We have Bartholomaeus now tied into the whole thing. So we have a whole separate little side loop going with Libya. We've got Libya involved with the Italian fascists. We've got Libya involved with people like Otto Skorzeny, ex-Nazis. We've got Muammar Gaddafi involved in supporting the Internacional Fascista, which is operating all over Latin America. We've got Libya also involved in the arms trade in terms of offloading Soviet-made weapons like the Kalashnikovs and others and getting those into the Stibom circuit. And now we also have them involved through people like Eugene Bartholomaeus and Ed Wilson, involved with Stibom and this particular sale of or would-be sale of atomic weapons to Syria. So there's a whole little side thing going with Muammar al-Qaddafi, who, as we mentioned earlier, is the quote-unquote idol of the Avanguardia Nazionale people who are linked to Licio Gelli and the P2 and who claim that Hitler, Mao, and Muammar Gaddafi are their shining stars. So Gaddafi apparently involved in this whole thing, and as we'll see in the Pope shooting in general, up to his neck. And as mentioned before, Frank Turpel, who claimed to have trained Mehmet Ali Agha how to use a gun at the time he was doing that, was also working for, definitely working for Muammar al-Qaddafi, and almost as definitely working at the same time for the American CIA.
We'll be talking about Turpel and some of the connecting links between him and this whole plot again next week. But perhaps for our purposes here, the most important things to remember is the American connection. The Los Angeles-based branch SUTAS, the connections to Reagan, Nixon, Frank Sinatra, Dean Rusk, the Glauco Partel, of course, being one of the key, well, Henry Arsan himself, who dies in prison, is working for DEA. Glauco Partel is working for the National Security Agency, and as we've seen, one of his key associates in the A-bomb scam was Eugene Bartholomaeus, who not only worked for CIA, but specifically was an associate of Edwin Wilson's in the Gaddafi, basically the CIA operation in Libya, whereby Gaddafi's terrorists were trained and armed. So again, remember the American intelligence connections, SUTAS, Arsan, Bartholomaeus, and Partel's connections to American intelligence front and center here, because again, one of the other top dogs, and I use the term advisedly, in Stibom was Bakir Chilenk, affiliated with the Grey Wolves and reputedly the paymaster for the plot to shoot the Pope.